championship on the line right here. He's going for the corner. He's got it.
Hello and welcome to 4th and 5, your Longhorn Nation podcast. I'm your host, Will Baser, and I'm joined alongside by Darius Terrell.
Hey.
You guys are listening to the Hornscast channel, which you guys can find on any podcasting platform out there. We're going to go over that Kansas game, the 50-48 win over the Jayhawks, which is just a little too close for comfort. Talk about what went wrong. Try to draw some sunshine out of that. Pump a little bit of it in there. And then get into the TCU game with Frogs of War's Parker Fleming. Let's go ahead and get right into it, though, Darius. That Kansas game was something. I don't know. It was a win.
It was a win.
And you really can't take those for granted, I guess.
It was a competitive dogfight. You know, yeah, I don't know. Maybe my heart wasn't, my heart's not hurting as much. I'm not as sick because I kind of had a feeling. But, yeah, man, that was tough. But the great news is, Cameron Dicker came through, saved the day, probably saved a few people's jobs, probably saved a few, broken items of furniture. And he saved Texas, more harassment on social media and in the public eye than they would have had they actually lost the game for sure.
Boy, I can't even imagine I was having trouble imagining it after Kansas went up with a minute to go, and I was like, oh, God, is this actually going to happen again?
You know?
At least Charlie Strong had the decency to lose away.
Right. No, even when they went up 48-47, first off, when they went for two, I'm like, yeah, I didn't even have to watch it. I knew they were going to score. I looked at how much time was left. I think it was like a minute 21, minute 31, something like that. Plenty of time. And Sam Ehlinger had been on fire this past weekend. So if I'm being 100% honest, again, my heart wasn't really racing during the game because I had a feeling it was going to be tough. When Texas went down 48-47, I was still kind of – I couldn't wrap my head around them losing the game, especially with the way Ehlinger had been playing. I know we'll get into it later, but that was a heck of a final drive he put together there.
Well, let's go ahead and get right into it then, actually. Let's get into some of these positives here, because a lot of fans out there are really ragging on Texas in this game, and rightfully so. Texas deserves a lot of verbal punishment for their performance against mm-hmm. Kansas, a team that they really should have beat by what Vegas said they should have beat them by. There are some things that will shine through the rough, like Sam Ehlinger. Yes, I know what fans are thinking when I talk about Sam Ehlinger, because he threw a very vital pick inside the 20. He had a few mistakes here and there, but beyond that, Sam Ehlinger had a tremendous game. He had 399 yards of passing and over 100 yards if you take away the sacks for rushing. He had a tremendous game, almost 500 yards of offense all by himself. And on top of that, 5 touchdowns. He had a tremendous game, improved once again. When Texas needs him the most, he is there. And per Brian Davis, he is on pace to challenge Colt McCoy's single-season passing record, which right now is 3,859 yards set in 2008. Ehlinger has 2,057 through 7 games. If he keeps on this pace, he could very well beat that and the single-season total touchdown record at 38, which he has right now, 21. He is on pace to do something historic this season, and it might not even be his best season because we also have potentially next year.
You know, I'm going to address him as Captain Sam Ehlinger moving forward, you know, since he's clearly the heart and soul. He's in charge of everything that's going on. But like you were saying, he completed 70% of his passes on Saturday. He threw 44 of them. He had 4 drops mixed in there, too, so that really should have been about over 75%. Well, we saw him complete all kind of passes this past weekend. We saw him on rollouts. We saw him complete the deep comeback that he struggled with. We saw him on slants, quick outs, speed outs. He even threw a curl route in there to Brennan Eagles. He made every type of throw this past weekend. And also, you know, we saw him show some pocket presence that he struggled with a little bit, I thought, in the Oklahoma game where he started seeing ghosts. He stepped up in the pocket. He made guys miss while keeping his eyes downfield, and he escaped when the opportunity came. Kansas doesn't have a guy like Kenny Murray. Not many guys do. So he was able to get out and do his thing. And I think after, you know, picking up some yards early in the game, scrambling when stuff wasn't there, that allowed him to settle in, and he really showed us what he was made of. Texas ended up racking up a season-high 638 yards of total offense, and they ran a season-high 85 offensive plays. And Sam showed us, again, with only one turnover, that's on him. He showed us all again why he's the heart and soul of the program. That's Captain Sam Ellinger there. They got a quarterback. Texas has a quarterback.
Yeah, and mixed inside of, what, 58 plays, you're going to have one mistake. That was his. Right. He had two other mistakes, which were sacks because he held onto the ball for too long. But also that's on the offensive line to do a little better. But in total, like you're saying, the offense was clicking. Keontae Ingram woke up, became a 1-2 punch with Rashawn Johnson. Brennan Eagles had probably his best and most complete game this season. Devin Duvernay Devin Duvernay and Colin Johnson came together, and we saw what they can do, especially being a lot healthier than he was in the past weekend. He performed much better, gave Sam Ellinger an outlet pass that he desperately needed in these past few weeks. This offense came to play and did tremendous.
Yeah, together, talking about Colin and Duvernay, this past weekend they combined for 16 receptions for 206 yards and 2 touchdowns. I noticed during the rewatch of the game earlier today, Texas lined Colin and Duvernay up on the same side, often on third down. And what that did is, as a defense on, you know, third and four, third and five, you can't take too many guys out of the box. You can't put four guys over and double both of them. Why? Because you don't have enough guys in the box. So what that does is puts the defense in a dilemma. So if the defense chose to double Duvernay, that's when you saw Sam hitting Colin on those slants. When you saw Duvernay open, that's when they chose to give Colin the attention. When those guys were together out there, just their presences alone, those two seniors, they may make each other better. And I think we saw Sam so comfortable because he knew that at the end of the day, if one of them's not open, he's got somebody open. They also opened things up for a guy like Brennan Eagles, who you said, you know, talked about earlier, having his best game overall so far.
Right.
So, no, Colin and Devin were awesome this past weekend.
Usually, Brennan Eagles is just a deep ball guy, but this game, he was pretty much everything. He's showing some very, very strong hands at the goal lines with some pretty difficult catches. And as I was saying, and you strengthened, Colin Johnson just makes this offense so much more potent just because of what he brings to the table. But yes, Texas did tremendous on offense. It kind of woke up again. It's interesting to see that Texas had this type of offensive game.
Let's not forget the tight end.
Oh, yeah.
Let's not forget the tight end. Kay Brewer.
You're right. Kay Brewer had a pretty good game. Yeah. And Jared Wiley was in there quite often.
He was in there blocking.
Kind of taking over that number two spot in the tight end room. And he's been kind of doing that game after game after game.
Yeah, you've seen them get more and more snaps each week. Wiley was responsible for one of those three sacks they gave up, Will. Kansas has a defensive end slash linebacker, number 5, Azur Kamara. He's going to go in the first 3 rounds this spring. He ran Riley smooth over, and he gave Texas problems all weekend. But Jared Wiley, I think, is going to be a really good player for Texas in the coming years.
Right, and you know who else is going to be a really good player for Texas in the coming years? Cameron Dicker. Texas's special teams looked so much better this year. Outside of the return game, because the return game on both sides, the kickoff and the punting, is just pretty atrocious. But again, you have Ryan Bushevsky kicking bombs over and over and over again. Very much and much more consistent Bushevsky than we've seen in years past, and he's only a sophomore. And then you also have Cameron Dicker, who is just nails. And on top of that, you have two blocks. Two key, crucial blocks, which are honestly the reason Texas wins. Though you take away one of those two blocks, Texas loses this game. It's as simple as that. You have Osai breaking it down in the middle. You have Jamison taking it all the way back. Those two plays win you this game. Special teams won Texas this game in 3 separate ways.
Yeah, when everything wasn't clicking. Again, we talked about the Oklahoma State game earlier this year. Texas probably done winning that in the past. Texas lost the turnover battle against Kansas, like you mentioned. Texas could not stop Kansas defensively, and we'll get into that in a little bit later on. But they still found a way through all other facets of the game to still turn things in their favor. And that's the game Texas does not win in 2018. They do not win in 2017. So I still see signs of progress, even though everyone will focus on the negative that, you know, you were in a tough contest with Kansas. At the same time, we're not giving Kansas, I don't think, enough credit either, because they have, you know, some big-time athletes over there too. But Texas still found a way to win, and that's what what I'm going to focus most on coming out of this game this past week.
Right. And there's also, you know, I know fans right now are listening to us and saying, oh, they're only talking about the special teams and the good part of the special teams and the offense and not talking about the offensive line. But there's also parts of the defense that did pretty well. That defensive line did what it was supposed to do and did it very well. Keiondre Coburn is a force in the middle. When you had Malcolm Roach back in there, he was making a difference. Marquez Beeson is a wrecking ball. Taquan Graham could probably do a lot better, but you have so much depth and so much playmaking ability in that defensive line, and they do what they're supposed to do, and they do it very well. So that is probably the best part of Texas's defense, and they're doing what they need to do. It's time for the second and third levels to step up, and guys like Anthony Cook at times did. Now, Anthony Cook is a little bit more hit or miss, but this is the second week where Anthony Cook has looked decent. And with Jalen Green being a possibility for this game against TCU, that is, you know, even if he's not there, he's coming back probably after the bye week. That's a good sign for the Longhorns, having a solid defensive back and a decent defensive back in that cornerback position, which will probably help out some of those woes they have in the passing game.
Yeah, we're witnessing a baptism by fire as far as the young cornerbacks go. Yeah, they're true sophomores, but Deshaun Jameson spent his true freshman year playing offense. Anthony Cook played sparingly during his true freshman season. Seemed to have a setback this spring with some injuries, this summer with some injuries, and got off to a slow start this year. But we've seen his playing time increase over the last month or so of this season. And I think we're starting to see some confidence come from those two guys, Jameson and Cook. They're definitely the part of the problem. You know, they're not one of the strengths of the defense right now. But I see positive things with those guys. With Cook, I just love how competitive he is, even though he's good for a pass interference every game. Hey, Will, at least he's not falling down, giving up on a play or something like that. He's still competing. He's not giving up, okay? We've seen Deshaun Jameson make big plays, and I know they're going to continue to have their struggles this year, but I'm seeing positives from those two guys, and I would be surprised if, this same time next year, they're not viewed by many as two of the better cornerbacks in the conference.
Yeah, at least people for Anthony Cook will be saying, wow, that guy had a huge turnaround. I cannot believe the year he's having, probably next year. We'll see what happens at the end of this year. But that's about it in terms of positives that I have for this team against a Kansas team that they should just physically outmatch with the talent they have. Before we start getting to the negatives of the game, let me go ahead and tell y'all about Last Stand Hats. Last Stand Hats is your one-stop shop for the best Texas hats out there. They put out some of the best quality items out there and some of the best designed items out there, and really take into account Longhorn fans' input in what they want. So, y'all, you're helping out yourselves if you go to Last Stand Hats. And also, the owner of Last Stand Hats just got married over this week. So go ahead and do him a favor by hopping on over to Last Stand Hats and using the promo code HORNSCAST10 to get 10% off your entire order when you shop at laststandhats.com. So go wear your heart on your head and go to the number one place for real Texas fans to get their game day gear. The negatives now. Here, let's get into some of these negatives here. Injuries are obviously have something to do with this. It's not an excuse, but it is a reason. I don't know how it sounds counterintuitive, but it is a reason that Texas is having a lot of trouble they have on defense. 8 of their starters are out with injuries. That's a huge toll in a team where they are already replacing 8 starters.
Right.
So you're having a lot of backups in there right now. And that's going to obviously cause a lot of regression in your defense, not to the point where Texas has right now, where they're on pace to being the worst defense Texas has ever fielded in football, in their history of their program. But injuries right now are having a large part in the setbacks the Longhorns are having. And then you also have Brandon Jones getting injured in that game. You have consistent injuries piling up on this team, and it's just killing them over and over and over again. And it's a vicious cycle because the injuries cause more injuries, cause more injuries, cause more injuries. It's just it's difficult. Once you catch that injury bug, it's hard to get rid of it.
Right. You need what you need for injuries is rest. And when you're playing and you're in the middle of a season, you're not getting any rest. You know, it's the same routine from 7 a.m. in the morning, from lifting weights or going to treatment or whatever, till 9:30 at night. You're on a schedule. It's nonstop. You don't have time to stop. Luckily for Texas, and I don't remember this happening last season or the season before, any time I was there. They've already had a bye week, and after this game this weekend, they get another bye week. They get two bye weeks during the season. I don't remember that happening. And I couldn't think of it, you know, this scenario happening for them working out with the schedule at a better time with the condition that they're in right now as a team. The injuries, all the safeties that you're going to see out there this weekend are put together by tape. TCU's got some explosive guys. I know we'll talk about them in a minute, but I think we're headed for, you know, yet another tough one, Will. But, you know, at the end of the day, as long as Texas can find a way to win, I think that's all that matters coming from this. We're not worried about any style points or anything like that right now.
Right. And also in this game, another huge negative that I had for the Longhorns, and you can look at Kansas putting up 500 and almost 70 yards of offense and say, yes, that is a huge reason that Kansas was in this game. And it is. It is. They were explosive, and they were just walking over this defense. But a very, very large part, and I actually think the largest part of the reason Kansas was in this game, is Texas losing the turnover battle 0-2. Those two turnovers, and it's the likely same thing of Texas and Oklahoma. Texas really should not have been in that game with Oklahoma. If you were watching that game on the field, the scoreboard did not show what that game looked like. It was very much dominated by Oklahoma. But Texas was in it because they got two turnovers. And crucial turnovers. Kansas did the exact same thing to Texas. They were in that game because Texas turned the ball over on their side of the field twice in crucial spots. That is why Kansas was able to stick around in that game. Otherwise, I don't know what happens there. It's probably, one, not as high scoring, and two, Texas probably runs away with it a little bit more than they did.
Well, not only that, too. Well, you have to fumble an interception. Let's not forget about in the first half the two failed fourth down conversions. Those are turnovers, too, basically.
Right.
And they're not just, I mean, and like a turnover, they swing momentum. Texas was up 14-3. They had a chance to pin Kansas back in their own territory, make them move the field. Instead, they go for it. I think the next play, Kansas hits on a deep ball and scores. And next thing you know, it's 14-10. All the momentum is back that way. Yeah, in a game where not many things went Texas' way as far as luck, as far as good bounces, fortunate bounces, again, they found a way to make plays. And you talked about it earlier with Malcolm Roach and with Joseph Asai making plays on the kickoff team, special teams, things like that. But I don't know what to say as far as the tackling, man. I've never seen anything like it.
Yeah.
And again, like I was saying a week ago, I don't know a legitimate way that you can work on it or fix it at this point.
Yeah.
Texas had that in the fourth quarter, and I don't know how many people noticed, but there was a number 30 out there on the field playing in the nickel. And if you ask why Texas kept bringing the same blitz over and over and over, I wonder if it was because they were afraid of having a guy out there that was a walk-on. He's listed as a running back on the roster. His name is Mason Ramirez. I think they might have been afraid to drop him in coverage. I don't know. They were afraid Kansas, who was already carving them up, they didn't need to go at the walk-on. They could just go at whoever. But Texas had a walk-on running back on the roster out there on the field playing significant snaps in the fourth quarter. And it the situation doesn't get any more dire than that.
Right.
And again, they still came out with the W. So just trying to be positive, even you know, through a game that was so – you know, so infuriating for many that were watching it. Just think about this kind of stuff that's going on, and they still came away with the win, getting another team's best shot.
Right. Yeah, you're right. The tackling issues have been a huge problem, and it's large part because they're already banged up. And then on top of them already being banged up, they're having some very terrible form where they are leading with the crown of their helmet or leading with their neck exposed, going after with their shoulder and their neck down. That is just asking for the stingers that they're getting, for the shoulder injuries that they're getting, and the injuries that they keep on getting. And again, it's a vicious cycle. They're banged up, which means they get tired, which means their form goes down, which means they go in with terrible tackling form after they're chasing down somebody. because they're tired. And then they go and attack terrible form, get injured, banged up again. It's a vicious cycle. It just happens over and over and over again. And that's kind of what's going on with Brandon Jones and why Brandon Jones is looking so bad.
Well, I will say in Brandon Jones' defense, he went out of the game early in the fourth quarter. He still led the team in tackles with 10. He was all over the place this past weekend against Kansas. This season, more than any other, just because of all the injuries they've had, we've seen him have to, you know, and be asked to do so much. I think we've seen him get exposed a little bit, you know, in some of the things he's not, some of the non-strong suits of his game. But, you know, Brandon Jones, like all the other guys out there, he's out there fighting. But, you know, he's limited. And he's going to be limited this weekend against TCU. And the Horned Frogs are going to be looking to get some revenge for last season for sure. You know, this is Gary Patterson's. This is number one on his schedule.
Oh, yeah, for sure. But one thing that I don't know if you can really pump sunshine into is the broken defensive planning that went into this game. Doesn't seem like Texas knew what they were doing going into this game. Kansas knew what Texas was doing on defense pre-snap for almost every play, which is why Carter Stanley looked like he did, where he threw for 310 yards and four touchdowns. He is not a good quarterback. He's not a good quarterback. But
he's the same Carter Stanley that beat Texas 3 years ago.
But he's not a good quarterback. He's just not. And
he looked like one this past weekend.
But exactly. Because he knew what Texas was doing before Texas even knew what they were doing. Texas was blitzing from the parking lot, was giving very obvious reads that even a guy I do another podcast with, Johnny Brashear, bitter white guy, on 90% of the plays could correctly predict when Orlando was bringing blitzes, and about 50% of the time correctly predict the specific blitz call. If he can do that, he's a basketball writer.
Yeah.
If he can do that, Carter Stanley can do it 10 times better, and then the coaches on the other side can do it even better than that. The defense, when we say simplify the defense, it doesn't mean simplify it down to three or four calls. And even other Texas football players like Quandre Diggs, like Charles Amenhu, are vocal on Twitter saying they're running the exact same play over and over and over again on third down. The deep safety blitz where he's blitzing from 15 yards away.
And you can clearly see the other safety walking over behind him to cap him. And it was obvious. But something that I had posted out on the site earlier, I was just thinking out loud. I don't have an explanation, you know, for the tackling epidemic that's played, you know. I don't have an explanation for Texas's, you know, their sudden inability to consistently set the edge ever since the West Virginia game. I don't know what's up with the run defense this past against Oklahoma, against Kansas this past week. But I think I did have part of an idea about part of what the issue was this past weekend, and it's not making any excuses for Todd Orlando or this staff. But following the Jayhawks 45-20 loss to Oklahoma, Les Miles fired former Texas wide receiver coach. I don't know if it's familiar to you, Les Kenning, who was here under Charlie Strong. He fired him, and then he promoted Brent Dierman from offensive analyst to offensive coordinator and QB coach. Dierman spent last season at Bethel College, which was his alma mater. Bethel went 10-0, averaged over 55 points a game and over 540 yards a game. Prior to that, he spent 3 years at Arkansas Tech, where he averaged over 550 yards per game. He had one of the most prolific offenses in college football, period.
Look at that, LSU fans. Les Miles getting more progressive on offense.
Right, man. I mean, if you would have saw this, it looked like LSU this past weekend.
10 years too late.
Right. But I think what the issue and part of the thing, I mean, we talk, Texas was playing Oklahoma this past weekend. Okay, their focus, you know, in the summer and in the preseason during fall camp, they're doing little parts, doing little stuff for Oklahoma. No focus was given to Kansas at all. All attention was on Oklahoma. And that same week, Kansas had a bye week. So they get a full Monday through Friday week of practices with their new offensive coordinator. Then they get a full game week with their offensive coordinator that Texas has no film on. Okay, you can go back and watch Bethel tape, sure. You know, you can go watch Arkansas Tech tape. But then you still have to watch Kansas from this past season and try to visualize, try to hypothesize how these athletes are going to look and how they're going to be used. And I think, you know, because Texas had to throw out all of Kansas' film from this year, I think it was a bit of a guessing game for Todd Orlando. And it's not the reason they gave up those points, but I do think it contributed, you know, to maybe 10 to 14 of them just from unfamiliarity with what they were going to see. It was a guessing game, and they did look a little bit unprepared at times. And I do wonder and feel like that played a part, because every week as a coach, as a coordinator, offensive or defensive, you're building your game plan around what you think they're going to do. And, you know, based on this season, after firing the coach and having 2 weeks of practice in between, he has no idea what Kansas was going to do. So I do think Texas was a little bit unprepared, and it was a bit of a special circumstance. And I think we would be remiss not to mention that.
Right. And when you were explaining this to me earlier, you brought up the point of Kellen Moore, right, for the Dallas Cowboys, where for 3 weeks, right, he looks unbeatable. But after you get some tape on him, he starts to show cracks and then loses three straight games in a row.
Yeah, you want it's surprise the first time through. You've never seen it before. You don't know the tendencies. You don't know what to expect. But okay, now in Kansas' case, it would have been 5 weeks of tape, six weeks of game tape. With Kellen Moore, it's 3 weeks NFL. Oh, we've got everything lined up. And next thing you know, Cowboys lose three games straight. They're super predictable on offense. They can't get anything going. He had to adjust. But coming into this game, Texas had no film on them. Brent Dierman was Kellen Moore facing a fresh offense, fresh defense that didn't know what to expect. And I'll give the Jayhawks credit. They've got guys that can play. Andrew Parchment can play. Robinson can play. We know Puka Williams can play. And they made some plays. They did what they're supposed to do.
But on the flip side, Texas has been having this issue with RPO offenses all season long. You had it with LSU. You had it with Oklahoma. You had it even with Oklahoma State. You had it with West Virginia. Now you've had it with Kansas. This isn't this is because Kansas is running a new identity. They have a new offense. Yeah, it might be. Might be a little bit. But Texas has been running out a different defense every single week. They're also running out with different guys. These defensive backs have no idea how to play the coverages they are being given at this point, where you have guys like on the two-point conversion, DeMarvian Overshown running and going after a short out route instead of covering the dig route that was coming right into his area. Simple things like that. And it's not just DeMarvian Overshown. It was a bunch of different guys having all these similar issues where if they know the concepts of a certain coverage that they've been, you know, running over and over and over again, they wouldn't have these mistakes. But Texas has had no identity over the past seven games of the seven games they've played.
And if I could interrupt, I think we saw DeMarvian Overshown in man-to-man coverage on that two-point conversion. I'm 80% sure that at no point in practice this past week did Texas have DeMarvian Overshown in man-to-man coverage. He was forced to having to be in that position because Brandon Jones was down, because other guys were down. I'm willing to bet he was never even in that. The first time he was in that position this week or in the past 2-3 weeks was during that game. And I don't think he was prepared for it. I honestly believe that due to all the injuries that have happened.
Right, and that goes to this, where these defensive players have never played these concepts that they are having to play in these games. Or they are just uncomfortable with them in general, which is leading to all of these breakdowns in coverage. That is the reason is these defensive backs have just been having to consume all these different concepts week by week by week and never really getting to cement what they should learn and understand. You have that, the blitzing being poorly thought out and obvious. But on top of that, you have no identity with this defense. And that allows Kansas and LSU and Oklahoma State and Oklahoma and West Virginia to know what you're doing when you're doing it before you even do it. So, Darius, if Todd Orlando got fired and you are hired as the defensive coordinator, what do you do right now to immediately fix this defense? What is your first few moves to fix this defense?
The first thing I'm doing, I think I'm moving to a four-man front. I'm putting the extra guy with his hand down. I'm going to the traditional 4-3 or 4-2-5, actually, in this look right now, even though the safeties are banged up. The cornerbacks, I wouldn't have. You know, Texas plays man-to-man coverage with the guys kind of close, but they don't teach them to put their hands on them. So what I would do, what we've seen from a guy like DeSean Jameson, when he's able to see the ball, he can make a play on it. when Anthony Cook sees the ball, he can knock it down. Not maybe pick it off like Jamison, but he can knock it down. So what I would do is first put the cornerbacks in bell technique. And what that is, they'd be about 5, 6, 7 yards off, lined up outside of the wide receiver with their butts to the sideline. So when they're backpedaling now, they're not backpedaling, they're running sideways with their eyes on who? The quarterback and the receiver, so they can see the ball coming the entire way.
Right.
Texas doesn't have linebackers that can drop very well in coverage. So I will play DeMarvin Overshown at one of those linebacker spots, okay? Even though he's not good at man-to-man coverage, we know he can play a bit of center field. He would allow me to drop him back kind of like that Tampa 2 look, okay? That's what he does well. We saw him do that on film. Joseph Asai is your best defensive player. They've had to play him at Mike out of necessity. We need that guy rushing the passer. He would be a guy that I would move the defensive end in obvious passing situations. We need Juwan Mitchell rushing the passer. But some of the main changes I would do is add another guy to the front, and I would change the coverages with the cornerbacks the way that they're being taught, so that they're able to see the ball, so they don't have to worry about watching receivers' eyes trying to guess or get their hands up, because it's leading to so many penalties and them getting beat. So I'd rather play off, give up the short stuff, make guys put a drive together on us instead of giving up the big plays like they've been doing.
Right, and you don't even have to move to a 4-man front to get that extra blitzer. Put Joseph Osai in a typical B linebacker position, or even move DeMarvin Overshown or B.J. Foster up there, like what you did last year against Oklahoma, where B.J. Foster was a wrecking ball up at the front of the line. Put them up there, those two guys, DeMarvin Overshown or B.J. Foster up the front line, where they don't have to think too much. They're just reacting and going forward. They're using their athleticism rather than having to think a ton. Or Joseph Osai, who is known as a dirty pass rusher, and using him to blitz the pass, because what helps a struggling secondary? A pass rush, which Texas has had absolutely zero of, unless they're rushing 8 guys. So get a guy up there on Osai, and he'll probably help your pass game a lot more up at the line than he would dropping back. Not because he's bad at dropping back, but because he is so good at going forward. And also, stop blitzing the damn safeties from 10 yards off the line of scrimmage.
And as far as simplifying the defense, like you said, it's not just 3 or 4 calls or anything like that, but give guys clearly defined, this is your job no matter what on this play. And I think that'll change some of the issues we're seeing. Like, what was that, the Oklahoma game? It kept changing whose responsibility it was to set the edge. You know, and you got guys doing different things on different plays, and that's when you run into those kind of problems. So when you talk about simplifying, it's not, we're just doing this basic vanilla deal, but make guys rules on top of what you want to do. Make them have a number one rule on top of it that they're responsible for on every play.
Right.
And I think we'll see a little bit better performance.
These simple changes would improve the defense tenfold. They might be a temporary fix for this season. I don't know if you can keep that going, but at this point, you're trying to stop yourself from becoming the worst Texas defense ever to be fielded. Todd Orlando is trying to stop from being the worst Texas defensive coordinator, worse than Manny E.S., worse than Vance Bedford's defenses.
Oh, yeah.
You're trying to stop yourself from being there. So you need to get back to simplicity and making sure that your defenders know what they're doing. So let's go ahead and get off of Kansas. It's a win. Be happy with it. Damn it, be happy with it.
Yep, positive vibes only. Positive vibes only.
But Javon Shepherd happened, Darius. Javon Shepherd was a guy that Texas put a lot of recruiting resources into. And now he's in the transfer portal. A guy who was supposed to be a project. He's a guy who had a lot of upside, a lot of athleticism, but he really didn't have the buy-in. He really didn't have the patience to wait and become the player that he can be. Honestly, you could see this coming from a mile away. A lot of guys were saying, okay, hey, this guy is not a great mental eval, but at that point, Texas was so bought into Javon Shepherd that they had, and they needed an offensive lineman that they went all in on him. Now he's likely leaving. What do you think, Darius?
Well, to be fair to Javon, I mean, there's a reason schools like, you know, late in this process, Georgia, Alabama, he was able to take those visits. They were holding spots open for him. Physically, he's about as impressive as it gets. I don't know if you saw the guy. He's 300 pounds, but he's lean. You know, he can run. He's athletic. I don't know Javon personally. I've heard that he needed work with his footwork and things like that. Offensive linemen usually, you know, very rarely do you see a true freshman offensive lineman come in and play. They usually need time to develop and adjust. And if Javon was under the impression that he was a guy that was going to come in and start or see playing time immediately, you know, I just think that was a little bit unreasonable on his part. Again, I don't know any details or specifics enough to say he was a culture fit or anything like that. But at the same time, you know, he wasn't the most steadfast guy, you know, in his commitment, you know, during his recruiting process. So maybe he's just looking around and, you know, kicking the tires on stuff like he did back then when he was being a recruit, you know. Again, he's a super athletic guy. He's listed as third string left tackle on the depth chart behind another true freshman, Tyler Johnson, by the way. Talking about young lineman to be excited about. But, I'm sure the Texas coaches echo this sentiment I'm about to say, you know, but I'd love for him to stay. But if he chooses to go, you know, best of luck to him. I will say, you know, there's more to life than football as well. And that's something I, you know, it's hard to understand when you're, you know, 17, 18, 19, 20 years old. But if that's what he feels is best for him, he's got to follow his heart. But it doesn't really make a lot of sense for me, a true freshman offensive lineman. Transfer in the middle of the season.
Yeah, well, it's a common sentiment amongst a lot of freshmen who are highly recruited. They are tell their entire 4 years in high school, you're the best, you're the best, you're the best. And then all of a sudden they come in where everybody around them is also the best. That's not just for Texas. That's for every main big blue blood program who gets these top classes. I'm sure it happened with y'all, Darius.
It's a reality check, right? Yeah, our class was the number two rated class in the country, you know. Everybody's highly rated, right? You know, at the same time, you know, those coaches, they're aware of rankings and stuff too, you know. I mean, it is true. Some, you know, five-star guys get a little bit different treatment. They get extra chances, you know. They get extra looks. But with our offensive lineman, again, he was listed on the depth chart as a true freshman. I feel like that was a sign. That's from them putting him on the depth chart at all. You know, that's them trying to keep him engaged, show him that he has a chance. He's not far off. It's just, yeah, it's tough. You know, at some point, you know, you got to stop doing interviews. Nobody wants to talk to you anymore. Nobody knows who you are. You got to reprove yourself all over again. And if you're not mature enough at the time, you may feel like it's everybody else's fault while things aren't going your way. And, you know, maybe it'll take you leaving and hopefully finding success somewhere else, but more than likely struggling elsewhere too before you realize it's time to look in that mirror. But again, wish him the best of luck if that's what he wants to do.
Yeah, the thing is that majority of guys who leave and transfer don't turn into Shane Bouchel, don't turn into Jalen Hurts, don't turn into Kyler Murray, don't turn into Baker Mayfield. Those are the exceptions to the rule.
No, because even still, wherever you go, even if you say Javon Shepherd transfers to another school, a smaller school, okay, so now those guys on that team now, this big time guy's coming there from Texas. They don't want you. You're going to get their best. They don't want you to beat them out, okay? It's mm-hmm. everybody, you, no matter where you go, what you do, you got to work. You got to prove yourself. And I don't know the kid personally, but it's not, the grass isn't always greener on the other side, and it's just a life lesson you have to learn.
Yep. But, y'all, I think we're going to get into next week and look a little bit farther forward and talk to Parker Fleming, otherwise known as Stats of War, from the TCU blog, Frogs of War. Parker, how you doing, man?
Doing all right, man. Thanks for having me on tonight.
No worries. Bringing you on here because of the big game this weekend, Texas and TCU. It's always an interesting game. It's Gary Patterson's big game of the year. However, both of these teams are coming off of some very tough games versus the Kansas schools. Both these teams do not appear to be trending in the right direction. Longhorn fans have seen what has been happening in Austin, but not really keeping an eye on what's going up there in Fort Worth, besides watching Shane Bouchel with the Ponies. So, what is going wrong right now in Fort Worth, and what's Gary Patterson doing?
I'll kind of answer that backwards and start the other way. So what Gary Patterson is doing is taking a lot of blame and saying on himself and saying it's the fault of the defense. The defense needs to play better and it's my fault and I made a bad play call. And he's really focusing on the defensive side of the ball. And that's fair. There's been some defensive issues, but what's really going on in Fort Worth this season is you have a good offensive line that has had some struggles, and we thought that would protect our freshman quarterback, or potentially Alex Delton if he was starting. And we haven't really decided which one of them is going to start. Neither of them has really shown. And we really only have one wide receiver. And so you have a really, really thin offensive unit that can't really separate itself. And the defense is playing catch up because of that. And it's resulted in them digging themselves some holes. Like SMU, they were down 14-0 at one point. Even though they came back and you know, were within a striking distance and probably should have won that game looking at post-game win expectancy. They just had a bunch of bad breaks, which kind of leads me to believe they're just not very good right now.
Keeping some focus on the offense. Not too long ago, a few years ago, you know, Sonny Cumbie was a coveted guy. You know, he was once the apple of Longhorns fan base's eye. Texas went after him. But recently he's come under a little bit of scrutiny. Why is that?
Yeah, so one, I wish that Texas had taken him. I'm not credentialed. I can say that. That's fine. Yeah, so I love to look at a couple key stats. I'm kind of a numbers nerd, and one of the big things I like to look at is expected points added, especially on early downs. So you're looking at, you know, first down, second down, kind of how are you establishing your offense? And TCU right now is in the negative in expected points average or added, excuse me. So they're just not adding value early on with plays, and they're only passing on about 38% of early downs. And so Sonny Cumbie is really, really scared of his freshman quarterback. And so what he's doing is he's relying on the back of two great running backs, Darius Anderson and Shewell Olanolua, both who are kind of this nice combination of thunder and lightning. And Texas fans will be quite familiar with Darius Anderson for a couple of knife kind of dagger end of the game runs the last few years. But the run game is not enough on its own to carry a passing attack that is completely lackluster. So Cumbie's coming under fire right now because TCU's offense is just about as bland as possible. They're punting basically once they cross their 40, they're punting if they hit fourth down. Unless they're inside the 35 of the opponent, they're punting. And so not very aggressive. There's no play action going on. There's very little pre-snap motion. There's not a lot of multiplicity. So really, really frustrating to see an offense that worked in 2014 specifically because you had extreme talent advantages, right? You had Boykin really came into his own, and you had a wide receiving core that had, you know, five or six names that could really beat you if you let them. And in 2014, at that time, this kind of space and speed and spread idea really, really flourished. The problem with Sonny Cumbie is that he hasn't changed those concepts at all. He has not made a meaningful step forward in adapting to the game. And I think a lot of us were blind to it because we blamed Kenny Hill for a couple of years. But looking at what's going on, as we've had less stability at the quarterback position and less talent advantage, which in the Big 12 we expect to have less of a talent advantage than we did you know, in the Mountain West before Sonny Cumbie, but also kind of outside of that heyday of that early 2010s. So really not a lot of innovation on the offense, really some just baffling decisions. I think about the SMU game. They ran the wildcat on fourth and goal and had Shewell Olanolua, who's never thrown a pass in his career, roll out and try and throw a pass instead of running an actual play with some kind of positive expected value. So just a bunch of head scratchers from Sonny Cumbie this year, and some cracks that have kind of been in the foundation of TCU's offense but have been masked by talent this year are kind of showing through.
Well, if you're not expecting it, then how is the defense going to expect it at all? That's some 4D chess right there.
Yeah, there's some galaxy brain moments, for sure.
But the quarterback right now, that freshman out of Iowa, Max Duggan, who seems to be winning this quarterback race out, what can we expect out of him behind center? Because it seems like he's on again and off again. At times he looks like Sam Ehlinger, and at times he looks like he has no idea what he's doing.
Yeah, so I'll note a couple things. One, I just learned that this year, because he's a freshman, it's Max Duggan.
Duggan,
which is totally counterintuitive, yeah. Duggan's looked – he's had his moments. So there's kind of two conversations about the offense, right? You're like overall big play-calling scheme and then specific freshman quarterback learning growing pains. And so just isolating that and talking about freshman quarterback growing learning pains – He's overthrowing the ball a little bit. He's a little nervous. But also he's very flighty. You probably saw the highlight of the Kansas State run where he just broke through the line and then smacked a guy right in the face and scored a touchdown and kind of had that moment.
Hard to miss that one.
Yeah, that was pretty great. And there's kind of two Max Duggins going on. And the best case scenario is TCU's running tempo. Duggan has the ball in his hands. He's getting quick passes and he's getting momentum. And you can see in his body language, he gets excited about that. He's up after the play. He's running back to the huddle. He's slapping guys on the helmet and saying like, let's go, let's go. And that is when Duggan is at his best. He's still inaccurate. He's still learning to get the touch on the deep ball. He's still hurried a little bit in the pocket and gets kind of tappy with his feet. But where he really, really struggles is when he's limited by the scheme and when they're running plays that he doesn't believe in. So you've seen a couple times we've run back to kind of the head scratchers of Sonny Cumbie. We've run reverses and Duggan just looks very lazy on the reverses, just knowing, hey, this isn't a good idea. I don't think this is what we should be doing. And so he struggles with a little bit of confidence. TCU has also been really quick to just throw Alex Delton in for an entire drive. And that's really gotten to Duggan's psyche. You know, obviously, I don't know the kid, and I don't mean to speak about 18, 19-year-old athletes, but you can imagine that it's hard to build confidence knowing that there's a grad transfer who your coach thinks really highly of, who's always waiting in the wings. And then for him to come in at the first sign of trouble has really impeded Duggan's development. And so, obviously, Duggan's not, you know, he's not Trevor Lawrence who's going to walk on the field and be a national championship-caliber quarterback, but he's kind of that mold of Andy Dalton where – and even Trevon Boykin, where you get in year one and you struggle and you learn the offense year two, year three, year four, you're developing and you're becoming great. He has all those tools. The development's just been rocky because there's a ceiling on the scheme and because Delton has just come in at very odd times. And those have been wasted drives in terms of Duggan's development, but also in terms of TCU's offense.
Yeah, it's definitely hard for a quarterback at all the positions to get a rhythm, you know, when they're getting – you know, getting rotated or, you know, at any point, it's hard for him to take chances when he knows he'll get yanked right out any sign of trouble or mistake, for sure.
Exactly.
You know, Longhorn fans are probably, you know, they remember Jalen Reagor from a year ago. I got to see him at Waxahachie High School. I know how special he is, how explosive he is. He'll probably, in my opinion, he's the best wide receiver that Texas will face this year. But the rest of the wide receiver corps seem to be struggling a little bit. What's going on with the receivers? You know, I know that you're talking about, you know, it's hard to get a rhythm, you know, got a freshman quarterback. Cumbie's having his struggles. What's going on with the passing game? What's going on with the other wide receivers not named Raker?
Yeah, so my stat for the bye week, I guess 2 weeks ago was the bye week. TCU, Jalen Reagor had 186 receiving yards through five games this season. That's it. Last year, he had 359, and instead of playing Purdue and Kansas, TCU had played Texas and Ohio State. So against better competition last year, he had almost 2.5 times the yards he had this year. So I think the problem is very much that, one, we are reluctant to pass the deep ball just because of a little bit of accuracy issues with the quarterback. But two, Reagor is really I'll say this diplomatically. The wide receiving core has failed as of yet to distinguish itself outside of Reagor, and he's very easy to key on in our scheme. So his biggest gains this season have been, you know, he's in motion and gets the ball in a weird spot. He really has had, or a couple late game, specifically when we're behind by Iowa State, just throwing outs to him and just trying to get the ball in his hands quickly. Other than that, we just really don't have a lot of wide receiver threats. Trevalence Hunt is really, really talented. He's got a drop problem. Tay Barber hasn't been healthy. Darius Davis has really been not what you thought he was. And so you're watching, you know, the Purdue game, for instance. I remember there was a clip and TCU scored. They threw to the tight end, who tight ends have been stepping up a little bit, but we're still not utilizing them a lot. They threw a touchdown to the tight end. And the reason the tight end was open is because three Purdue defenders just keyed in on Jalen Reagor. And so you can understand why he's not as exciting this year, not because he's not talented or not performing, just because he's getting keyed in on and TCU's having trouble punishing people outside of or for overcommitting on Reagor.
So let's go ahead and break into the run game here, because Sewu Lanalua and Darius Anderson are incredibly potent as a duo. but that offensive line is gotten, you know, I don't think it has improved. And you thought it would with everybody getting a year older and then Lucas Niang holding down that right tackle spot. What is going on with the running game this year? It seems to be the only thing that's keeping this TCU team alive, but it doesn't seem to have taken a step forward.
Yeah, so I think that I actually just disagree with that slightly, not to be argumentative or anything. Just like TCU's stuff rate, they're sixth in the nation at preventing stuff runs, so like less than 2 yard gains. And in terms of opportunity rate, which is giving your running back at least 5 yards to work with, they're 10th in the nation right now. Right. So I think that there has been a little bit. So Niang was like out a little bit during Kansas State and hasn't been like last year. He literally was untouchable, like didn't allow a sack, was just incredible, had a great, you know, PFF grade, all that. So this year is the unit, I think, is they took a little bit of the step you expected to see. I think the problem is that we can only run. And so, look, you can run for 4 yards, 4 yards a carry, but 4 yards on first and 10 is a failure, right? You're at second and six, you're behind schedule. So it's really, really hard to keep pace when all you can do is run, especially when a team like Iowa State with a tight front can put nine guys feasibly up in the box and just say, okay, we'll tackle you. Or Kansas State can just play this big bear monster defense and say, yeah, pick your hole. We'll give you a couple yards, but we're not going to give you an explosive play. I don't think it's as much execution as it is just single, you know, unidimensionality, and that TCU can't really do multiple things. And so even though you have extreme talent, it's a little bit of game theory where we know you're going to run, so we can't, there's not a lot you can do.
Right. I imagine that was probably the case, but still it doesn't bear out in the numbers.
Yeah. Yeah. It's one of those things where it is a little bit like an onion, just because there's so many things wrong right now that it's hard to say exactly what's going on. Yeah.
Well, Parker, what has been, in your opinion, what's been the most effective way for a defense to attack this offense, to stop this offense, to slow it down defensively?
Make Max Duggan uncomfortable. Delayed blitz has killed TCU. Just killed TCU.
We just spent an entire show saying to stop the delayed blitz.
Texas runs accidental delayed blitzes with how far they bring guys from. Yeah.
I did see. I don't know if it was you guys or maybe it was the SB Nation people. Someone wrote an article and the headline was like, "Me, a football idiot, can recognize Todd Orlando's blitzes," and I laughed so hard. Yeah. It is one of those things where it's just like Duggan's a freshman quarterback and that's how I would attack him. I think that you stack the box and make Duggan pass. He gets really happy with throwing deep and kind of is prone to overthrow. So, you know, Texas's weakness on defense is kind of that secondary. And so you have a lot of room to cover for the secondary. So if I was planning for that, I would probably drop a linebacker for a defensive back and then just key in on the run, knowing that the pass game is going to have a little bit more flexibility because TCU is not as good. Other than that, yeah, I mean, it's not like TCU is doing a lot of motion or anything. If you can tackle a screen pass, you'll probably stop TCU on a drive. They're not often going three and out, but they're going six and out pretty frequently. And so just making sure that you don't let TCU's tempo get to you, because if they get in a rhythm, they're kind of going, and they've had a couple drives, a touchdown against Kansas State, 10 rushes in a row. So if you can stop the run and then just not get beat by tempo or the screen pass, you're going to be in a good position to beat TCU.
Did you say tackle?
It's a foreign concept to some people. We're struggling with it too.
Yeah, I don't know. But they're in trouble.
Honestly, Kansas State didn't tackle hardly at all, and they still managed to pull off the win last week. So maybe there's some flexibility there too.
We'll see. But let's switch sides to this defense here because we don't really want to talk about Texas' defense. Usually the defense for TCU has been pretty solid under Gary Patterson. It's still looking pretty decent with an SP Plus ranking of 32. But I've been reading about some unrest in the fan base of when it comes to the defense. Is everything okay in the world of Gary Patterson and that defense? What's the word there?
Yeah, so there's a couple forces there that I like to highlight. One, SP Plus at this point in the season still has preseason projections baked in, so TCU's benefiting a little bit from that, and so they're probably worse than where they are. What, like low 20s, I think now. So I think they're probably worse than that. But also, Gary Patterson is very quick to, he doesn't let coordinators talk to the media hardly ever. He doesn't let he really takes the defense seriously and kind of takes a lot of blame on that. So there's been a lot of attention on that. And really, the problem with the defense has been the offense has been pretty turnover prone. And, you know, hey, if they're starting on the 14-yard line, the other team's going to score. That's just going to happen. The second thing that happens on the defense is that we have had a revolving door at the second linebacker position, coupled with Garrett Wallow, who's a second-year starter and a pretty great defender, being a little bit head full of steam and over pursuing pretty chronically. He will just run past an assignment trying to get to the ball. And so play action has been really, really effective. Innis Gaines, who is a great safety for us, kind of our joker, some people might call him that, last season, and he got hurt. This season he's been back healthy. Expected big things out of him, and he's just blown some assignments. Just not looked good. Very sloppy communication. Really feels like the guys who were starters last year are pressing in the secondary to make plays, and they're overcommitting and getting burned on play action, getting burned on misdirection. Couple that with perhaps the most underwhelming defensive end unit that TCU's had in a really long time, which seems weird. That's been a staple. You know, there's a bunch of names. Ben Banigou last year, LJ Collier, first round draft pick, a bunch of guys playing defensive end for TCU that have been really, really good. And this season, you know, Oshon Mathis, who was solid last year, and Shamik Blackshear, who transferred in from South Carolina, just haven't looked that good, haven't really got quarterback pressure. And so TCU always, 4-2-5, always struggles against a rushing quarterback. Any kind of play action, any kind of RPO is just going to really force defenders to make decisions. And TCU's been really, really poor when they've had to make decisions.
So you talked about how ineffective the defensive ends have been. Let's talk about the guys in the interior of the defense. How good or how effective have Ross Blacklock and Corey Bentley been this season for TCU?
I think I would put Blacklock up against anybody talent for talent on the defensive line. You know, he got hurt last year. And so
wonderful, because Texas has been doing so well against really good defensive tackles.
Yeah, he was a heavily recruited guy, too. I remember Ross Blacklock.
Out of and honestly, if he'd have played last year, he'd have gone to the draft. But he tore his ACL like 2 weeks before the season, very, very quick before the season.
I remember that, yep.
Yeah. So TCU in the interior, you know, go back to that stuff rate. TCU is fourth in the nation on stuff rate defensively. And so a lot of that's going to be your interior linemen kind of stuffing the run, and also linebackers floating up. You know, with the 4-2-5, you also get the safety kind of coming in and helping you out with that. But the interior defensive line has gotten a really big push. Again, not a lot of sacks, not a lot of QB hurries, but in terms of the rush game, have been able to kind of clog the middle. And so you could see if defensive ends were average or above average, there would be a lot of room for havoc, you know, people making tackles behind the line or out of position. But they've done a good job kind of clogging the middle, kind of getting a push. The defensive ends just haven't really supplemented them to kind of highlight how good the interior line has been.
Right. We got the front line figured out. Let's go to the second line here, linebackers. TCU seems to be very young and thin at this position. How has that affected this defense this season? It seems like the guys beyond that are just a whole bunch of freshmen.
Beginning of the season, beginning of August, Montrell Wilson, a senior, fifth-year senior, he's struggled with injuries his whole career, was planning to be the starting linebacker this year, just was so banged up, couldn't play anymore. And so really, really right before the season, just had to left the team, actually. And so that kind of left a big hole. You had Van Zandt playing, covering for him, who was a true freshman. And his claim to fame was that in practice against Jalen Reagor, he was going, you know, step for step covering him. But Van Zandt got picked on a little bit, being a freshman, kind of being out of position. He was a safety who moved up to linebacker, kind of like the opposite of Garrett Wallow last year. Did the same thing. He moved up from safety to linebacker. Wallow's really, really talented, but again, kind of sophomore, and would be great if there was, you know, a senior presence next to him. Last year with Ty Summers, who's a great linebacker and a freak who can lift all sorts of weights and plays for the Green Bay Packers now. Ty Summers was a good job of being that kind of quarterback on defense and kind of directing people. TCU really lacks that linchpin on defense this year of kind of the experience. And you can watch them before the play. There's a bunch of turning heads, a couple raised hands saying, what are we doing? Figuring out the calls. And so that's really, really hurt in the linebacking core because, you know, again, weak defensive ends, the linebackers are really the ones that are flying to the ball and stopping the rush. And if they're a little bit confused, that's just they lose a step or two. And so that's been really hard. Wallow also is kind of prone to trying to throw the hit stick. And so he misses tackles left and right when he tries to make a big play. And then we're actually having to start another freshman who got his first start last week. And I honestly can't even remember his name because he's the next man up. But so we're starting another new freshman at the second linebacker this week.
Okay. So Van Zant is out.
Yeah, Van Zant is out, and it's, man, Wyatt Harris, I think is his name.
All right, so you mentioned some of the TCU defensive backs, guys like Ennis Gaines, things like that. We know TCU is working with a defensive backfield that's got some experience. Out of all of them, who would you say is the name that Texas fans need to know the most? Who's the guy that's most capable of making a big play and flipping things in TCU's favor?
Yeah, so, I mean, I think TCU's cornerbacks have been highly touted coming into the season. And I think with Texas's wide receiver core, that's really who you're going to look at is can Jeff Gladney and Julius Lewis do anything at the line of scrimmage to kind of disrupt Texas's receivers. So those two are really, really good. Jeff Gladney was, you know, consensus all Big 12 pick. People really thought he'd be great. He struggled a little bit, but again, that's, you know, when there's so many moving pieces that are weak, it's kind of hard for one guy to be excellent. Vernon Scott has come back playing safety over the top, and Vernon Scott hasn't been healthy and hasn't looked great, but has looked a little better in the two games he's played, you know, as the game has gone on. And so he's a guy that's really capable of kind of breaking things up in the secondary. Lastly, Ennis Gaines is that other safety, kind of the rover, the joker, I said. And Ennis Gaines was really a leader on this defense last year and is really, really talented. He's a senior and knows this defense really, really well. And when he's on, he's kind of next level. He's been very inconsistent this year. But when he is when TCU defense is at its best, Ennis Gaines' name gets called play after play after play because he's making tackles on the rush. He's always keyed in. So I'd say the two that are really important are Ennis Gaines. And then, you know, we put Jeff Gladney on Rondale Moore against Purdue and just shut it down. They were playing with their backup quarterback and that's fine, but like Moore didn't have room to breathe. Those two are really, if TCU's defense goes as those two go in terms of their ceiling for sure.
Good to know. Good to know. So if you're Tom Herman, sort of the opposite of what we just asked you, if you're Tom Herman, where and how would you attack this defense?
Yeah, I mean, I would play action RPO over the top until you adjusted, and then I would run it straight off tackle and make you deal with it. I know Texas has some running back issues, but I'm also of the, you know, analytics school that says running backs are largely interchangeable, except at the extremes of talent. And so as long as you are executing, you're going to gain yards. But I think TCU has been prone to getting fooled, trying to overcommit to the rush. Both of Kansas State's passing touchdowns last week were play action, which Kansas State had three passing touchdowns coming into the game, and they scored two more against TCU, which is just terrible. Yeah. So I think that Ellinger is going to have a lot of opportunity to make some plays. A rushing quarterback really, really hurts TCU. So I think if you can do any kind of delay with Sam and have him have an option to pull and run, or even an RPO where TCU's defenders are going to have to freeze and think, is he going to run? They'll get beat over the top, or you can punish him with the legs.
Texas does that with five wide all the time.
You can't. I mean, you can, as long as he'll slide and not get hit in the face. Ellinger can run a ton. Yeah. And also he runs more in big games, which I think is interesting. You know, it's kind of like that's really the weapon, but I feel like Texas kind of saves him a little bit. So if I think they can beat him, I think Texas can beat TCU without running Ellinger, you know, 25 times. But if they need to, they could certainly do it that way too.
Well, I guess we'll end off here. What do you think is going to happen in this game? Vegas says that y'all are winning by 2 points. But
that
do you believe that?
Insane. I have talked to I have three or four friends who are, you know, professional going on air talking about gambling and stuff, and none of them have any idea. I don't know if this is some kind of weird Vegas game theory to get the line to move or whatever, but TCU minus 2.5 seems insane. Texas plus anything seems like free money. I think it'll be scrappy, but I just don't see that TCU just lets himself get in a hole and has done that consistently. And so I could see Texas coming out and scoring, getting up 14-3, scoring field goal or touchdowns where TCU scores field goals. Even if TCU is moving the ball against a weak passing defense, they just aren't really good at closing. And Texas is really good at closing once they get in that scoring opportunity, 40 yards or in. And so I'm looking at something in the range of like 35-17 Texas. I think it'll be closer than that until the fourth quarter, and Texas will kind of, you know, tack one on for style. But I'm not very optimistic about this game from TCU at all.
See, if I was betting, I'd take the over almost every time in any Texas game.
Yeah.
Because Texas has a bad habit of making bad quarterbacks look really, really good. So we'll see. We'll see if Max Duggan shows out or Texas finally figures out how to tackle. I think I know which one I'd put my money on. But
well, I hope you're right.
But Parker, thank you so much for joining us. It was a blast having you. Can you tell us where we can find you on the internet?
Yeah, you best place to find me is to follow me on Twitter at StatsOWAR. So like Stats of War minus the F, kind of a riff on Frogs of War. I have articles up on Frogs of War on Thursday. The Frogs of War or the Stats of War podcast goes up Thursday morning too. And I'll do a Texas preview this week. So, I do a bunch of graphs and numbers on there. And so Twitter's the best place to find me.
Yeah. Stats of War. If you guys aren't following it already, then you have to. It's a really, really good follow. I just found him this year. And it's the reason I'm having on the show, because the dude's worth a follow. One of my favorite stats, I actually pulled it up on our show last week about Oklahoma, was the field position battle that Texas lost, which gave them a 10-point disadvantage, which if they get that figured out, they probably win. But again, Parker, thank you for coming on. Pleasure.
Thanks, yeah, Parker. For sure, y'all. This was great. Thanks so much for having me.
Again, thank you to Parker for coming on the show. Awesome dude. Great follow on Twitter. Highly recommend again. But I think we're going to end off there. This has been 4th and 5, your Longhorn Nation podcast. I've been your host, Will Baizer. You guys can find me on Twitter at WILLBAIZER. And Darius, my man, where can we find you?
Hey, y'all can find me on Twitter, DTerrell, TerrellL, 2 R's, 2 L's. Don't forget it, 05. Shoot me a message, hit me up. I love to chop it up with you.
And you guys can find both of our works on texas.thefootballbrainiacs.com. Go ahead, subscribe. The content there is well worth it. Other than that, you guys can find us on the Hornscast channel and our other podcasts there. We're going to be having the basketball podcast coming out this week as well, so keep your eyes out for that. You guys can find that on any podcasting platform at Hornscast. On that note, thank y'all for listening, and we will see y'all next week. Hook 'em.